Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hey! This episode is with really brilliant, brilliant comedian Chloe Pitts, and it's an absolute belter if we don't say so ourselves. Thanks for being into the Hoovering podcast, please. If you want to show it some love, you could give it a 5-star review and subscribe to it. Grazie. Just tell other people about it. Or if you've got actual spare money, you could help the podcast with that. You can bung it a one-off amount, like maybe enough for a coffee or a lunch's worth to, like, feed a guest. And me, you go to supporter.acast.com/hoovering. Or if you wanted to help me out on a monthly basis, from anything as little as £2 a month, I've got a Patreon. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/thehooveringpod. And I'll swap you really fun podcast related stuff. Loads of completely and utterly exclusive content, some advanced content, things like guest recipes and discount or free tickets to live shows, be they virtual or real. Right, oh, and on there as well, I should add, they've just added a function where you can buy your whole year's worth of monthly subscriptions or patronings, whatever you want to call them, in one wallop. And that way you get 10% off. Okay. So Chloe and I are talking remotely, what with us both being tier twoers at the time of recording and it not being nice enough to meet outside. And we did lunch bingo, which is just scoffing lunch, whatever lunch we were going to have been having anyway. And as you'll hear and see if you go on the social medias, Chloe very much outdid me. Very impressive. She had a very swanky lunch. Had a very brown, unphotogenic lunch. And yeah, I mean, I know there's a little bit of glitchy internet noise because of the blooming Zooms at the start of this, but it does go away pretty quick, I promise. Don't give up. And we get deep into so many things. And fascinatingly, unbeknownst to me, Chloe's a mega fan of competitive eating. And we end up having one of, arguably, the spiciest debates I've ever had on this podcast. It's juicy and also respectful and reflectful, not a word, and great.
She's only bloody gone and done it.
We've absolutely managed this all by ourselves.
You've really done that well.
What we've done is, I'm sorry, I've got very direct sunlight at me, but It'll go in a minute and it'll be pitch black here.
That's absolutely fine. I can deal with changeable light.
Now you have, what we've done is a mystery lunch hoovering is what we're doing here. We've not planned to eat the same thing. We've just gone for, let's just have what we were going to have for lunch anyway. And I have to say, you have absolutely kicked it. You've kicked it in the penis, haven't you? You've kicked it very, very hard, right in the todger.
I've kicked it in the penis, but obviously that's not what I was going to eat for my normal lunch. Like, I probably would have had, like, you know, a cream cracker and 10 packs of crisps or something. I'm obviously showing off for you.
What it looked like that you've made for your lunch that you wouldn't be a normal lunch is, it looks like egg fried rice with an egg on it as well.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say it probably is like a fried ricey dish. So it's an ottolenghi, one of his like meals for one.
Oh my fucking God. He does meals for one, does he? What book's that from?
Guardian article, obviously.
Okay, yeah.
Basically, like, I've got into him quite a lot because I'm not even sure why. Like, my mates make his food and it's always sort of very refined and flavourful and interesting. Mm. Whereas I just sort of, like, if I cook for my friends, it's just like, here's buck and pie and some potatoes. So I've been trying to work on my, like, using flavours and stuff, but it's actually so easy. You just have to put flavorful stuff in it. So this, yeah. What I've done is I fried some garlic and ginger together until it went brown and crispy. So basically, I just deep fried some garlic and ginger.
Did he say to let it go brown and crispy then? Because he likes those burnt flavors, doesn't he?
Yeah, he said brown and crispy, and then he said put it to one side so it gets even more crispy. So you take it off the entire, it gets crispier. Did you know that?
No.
I'm learning so much.
This is amazing.
And then
I've got all his books. I've never done anything where I've learnt that.
Have you got the new one that looks like it's got a vagina on the front of it?
Is it the one called Flavour where it does look like it's got very, it's a colourful onion, isn't it? But it does look a little bit like a tuppence.
If if you think it looks like a vagina, that's probably the one.
Yeah, I haven't got that. Have you? Is this what this recipe's from?
No. I'm telling you, it's from a Guardian article.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So also in that Guardian article, there's a good, like, tomato, sweet potato, feta one.
Oh.
That's delicious.
Yes.
But it's so simple. You just got to put in a bit more time.
I love this that you're like, it's one of those things where I had to check I'd heard it right before I wanted to laugh, and then it's too late to laugh. But I really liked it that you're like, I'm trying to learn to cook with flavours. In itself is such a funny thing to say, Chloe. It's probably the most English thing I've ever heard anyone say. I'm having to train myself to have things that taste of things.
Have you heard that there's more spices than just salt? Have you heard of that?
Yeah. It's a funny one, I think, where I think sometimes I'm 100% in the mood for fuel, something that tastes of fuel. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I want ottolenghi food. Although he mixes the worlds really nicely. Like, I love that. He introduced me to baking rice, and that is fit. He makes rice so sexy, like all this sort of lemony, black garlicky gubbins. He's a genius, I think. Anyway, you've made a lunch that looks very pretty. And does it taste as good as it looks?
It's so good.
It's so good. Anything with a fried egg on it. Like, so I saw someone doing, well, I think I made it, I might have even made it on a podcast, but like ramen noodles, like by which I mean like super noodles, but with a bit more liquid, with a runny egg on top. Like, yes!
I think if you can get that boiled egg perfect where you cut it in half and it's like a bit hard but a bit runny, that's just so aesthetically pleasing and you look like a chef.
Yeah, you do look like a chef and everyone wants to go off with you.
It's true.
I've done the opposite and done something that looks horrific, but actually, so I've got like some leftover spicy parsnip soup. I'll send you a picture later, but I mean, it just is brown slop.
Did you make it?
Yeah, I did a couple of days ago. And I hate, I would have liked to have done something snazzy for this. And originally when we thought we could legally meet up in person, I would have taken you for snazzy food in Catford. But in the end, actually, the feeling of, the niceness of the feeling of eating something up trumped the desire to make something impressive. And even though it looks...
to be in my company.
Yes. But also, I think, I do think it's interesting how nice something looks. I think if I was going to eat something that looked nice, I'd have been more excited about eating it. Whereas because this looks like shit, it's kind of hard to remember how nice it's going to taste because you visualise it, don't you, before you're having it, the thing. I think I do that more than visualising the taste of a thing in anticipation. But then I'm so hungry now that even preparing it, I was like, I can't wait. I can't wait to get it in. And I'm having it with this sourdough that's toasted and I put loads of butter on it because it's cold and that's the mood that I'm in. It's fucking lush. This is lush. This is just what I wanted, actually.
Do you know what else is good about heating up something is the satisfaction that you've like been a really good adult.
Yeah.
You're like, ha, this isn't a Pret sandwich. This is something that I made a few days ago and isn't costing me any more money than I've already spent.
You do feel very financially smug, don't you, when you eat up something that you made with a fucking bag of parsnips and some lentils. Very smug.
This is a thing, actually. Tell me about how you find this. I think with the transient, like, stand-up lifestyle, I could never get, like, a rhythm together of cooking at home, so I would just constantly eat out, and I think it made my diet really bad. Do you find that? Did you find that you were picking something up on the go?
Yeah, but also then, I don't know, like, I love cooking, but I hate cooking in a rush.
Yeah. So,
and I love eating out. Like, I didn't hate that life, is what I'm saying. But I understand it was also a very privileged one to be able to eat out and still eat well. Like, I don't think it made my... I think back in the day when, like, you're picking up whatever shit's available at a service station at 11 o'clock, that's shit. Like, it's not the dream, is it? It's not the dream.
No.
But if you're, like, splashing out on an Itsu or a Leon on your way to the gig on a train. Yeah, yum, yum, yum. And I don't think that's that bad. I think it's great. That's probably healthier than, or as healthy as, or whatever. Nutritionally is similar to what
I think that sort of mine was a Tesco meal deal though, and then obviously that wouldn't be sustaining enough, so you'd have to go back for a second Tesco meal deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not the healthy lifestyle.
No, also, so I last two nights I've noticed that I've incidentally, because of eating things up, because we're just in at the moment, I'm not used to it, so much being in. I'm still not used to it. Initially in lockdown and stuff, I loved it and was planning and took a lot of joy from cooking, but I still am, but like the sheen's worn off. And like the last few nights to eat stuff up, I've had like dinners early that happen to have low or fuck all carbs in them. And I'm starving by 9:30, like proper body hunger. And it's like, it's like a nice little reminder to don't just not have carbs, you idiot. Don't think you won't get hungry later.
Yeah. This is the thing. This is one of my favourite podcasts, Jess. And,
is it?
I really like it.
Thank you. You're one of my favourite comedians. Thanks for doing it.
Yes, that's too much.
You're really
but
great.
But basically, because I like it so much, I've sort of been like planning like, oh, I want to talk to Jess about this.
Hey, you go. Mate. I'm knackered. You go. You can interview me. Tell me what you like. Tuck in. Have we got time for my questions? Perfect. But just full steam ahead, babe.
Question me as well. I want space to improvise. I want space to be free. I want to discover stuff. I want to interrogate my food journey, you know?
Beautiful, beautiful.
But one of the things, and I don't know if you share this with me, but it sounds like you do, I'm one of these people that is like, I will have lunch and dinner as early as I can possibly get away with it. So as long as it's socially acceptable. So I'm like there at the clock at 11:59 and I'm bam, 12, I'm eating lunch.
Wallop, wallop.
5 p.m. I'm thinking, I'm thinking that's a bit too British, 5 p.m. dinner. I'll wait till 5:15. Bam.
Yeah.
I'm
I love that. Yeah, I really like that.
Mm. I revolve my days around what am I going to eat next? Yeah. And I get so excited about what I'm going to eat next. And then I just can't. Do you know what? I'm trying to write a bit of stand-up about this and I can't quite make it work yet. But you know those kids? you know them kids? The ones that that they'd be like, you can have a sweet now or two later.
Yeah, the ones that could have two later.
I'm like, as a kid, I would have been like, I'll have one now and I'll know that there's another one knocking around the building if I can have two later. So I'll eat that one and then fight the adult for the second one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I'm just very like everything now, impulse, mm-hmm. impulse, like satisfaction. What about yeah. you?
No, very similar. It depends on my mood, actually. As an adult, it depends on my mood. Like, I mean, not to get too balls deep into anything that's very far from comedy very early on, although that is my way. But in terms of the journey I've been on with my relationship with eating, I'm better than I've ever been at stop. If I'm offered something to eat, like in that scenario, the classic scenario with the kid, do you want a thing now or do you want two later? On what fucking sadistic level? Who's asking kids that shit? Like, what kind of power happy, dick swinging, like vampire demon headmaster is asking kids that shit? Because it feels like to roll back to the question, feels like, oh, that's like is this like an early test of willpower? I don't know. I hate the idea. I think willpower's a myth. I think we are fundamentally designed as part of the very core of our humanity to desire and food because you need it and there's so much joy to be taken from it. And I think there's a perversion in enjoying delayed. It's not the same as, I don't think other things that spark dopamine, I think, like sex and drugs and all those things where there can be an element of enjoyment in delayed gratification. I think with eating, if you are hungry and your body and your brain are screaming at you, yeah, have a sweet, to go, no, I'm going to wait an hour, is fucking yourself up from childhood, isn't
it? Yeah, yeah,
like, yeah. I think you're essentially, the question is asking children, I understand this is hypothetical, but I'm feeling quite high horsey today.
I think they've done it.
Yeah, they have done it. And equally, I think to answer your initial question, as a kid, I don't know. I'm not sure. I imagine pretty impulsive. I was rarely given that ultimatum, I think. But now I think if it was like, do you want a sweet? I'd be like, Mum, don't know. And I'd stop and I was thinking and really, I'd think about it if I wanted it and then go, yeah, most of the time, yeah. But often actually, sometimes no. It's mainly because I haven't got a sweet tooth.
Really?
Yeah, I'm quite good at rejecting sweets.
I neck the sweets, you know.
I love the word neck. I've not heard that for a bit.
It's good, isn't it?
Do you know what? It's one of those. Downing sweet.
It's a good word where you use it out of the context that it's meant to be used. It's funny.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Anyone? Hello?
Yeah, no, I'm laughing. Yeah. No.
Is it the Zoom connection again?
to the internet drop out?
It was just a thought.
Yeah, it was a lovely thought. Do you think you'd be all right up in space where you're only allowed little sachets of dust if you're new to caring about flavour?
What a question. No, I'm not new to caring about flavour. I'm just new to put it in my own food.
Yeah.
I would be absolutely awful. Like, there's nothing worse. You know, like Huel.
Oh, fuck off, yeah.
Why would you want that? Like, the whole enjoyment out of food isn't to get the requisite nutrients. It's to, like, eat loads of butter and exceed the limits that you should have set for yourself. Should have set for yourself, in quotation marks. No, I'd be awful in space.
Yeah. I'd get really sad. I'd get really sad, and my sadness usually manifests as extreme irritability. So I'd probably like refuse to do my bit as part of the team and contribute towards our demise.
Just like float in space like George Clooney in Gravity. Just to make a point.
Yeah, just like George.
You're not sure what point you're making, but off you drift.
Yeah. Chloe.
Yeah.
Tell me the swankiest thing you've ever eaten.
Oh, fuck, man.
It's a new question. Has it thrown you?
No, I haven't got an encyclopedic knowledge of all the hoovering questions. I've prepped for all of them. I've done the star technique. that has not thrown me. I just like it as a question. So my mum and dad is not the way that I should have started that sentence.
I love it. The swankiest thing I've eaten is my parents.
It's my mum and dad. No, there's this restaurant in like the town adjacent to the one that I grew up.
Oh, where was that?
I grew up in Sittingbourne in Kent.
Mm.
So this is sort of like on the cusp of Sittingbourne and Faversham. You've probably gigged in Faversham, I'm sure.
Oh.
Cusp of Sittingbourne and Faversham, there's this Michelin star restaurant called Reed's, and it's like you drive up this sort of main road and then it's just a little road off it, and it's a beautiful sort of like house, kind of old school house, and they've turned it into like a restaurant, so you can rent out like a room to have
amazing,
or you can eat in the communal space. And mum and dad will sort of save up and take us as a family, extended family and friends, for like
that's awesome
like anniversary. And the food there is absolutely incredible. And just like like locally sourced and delicious and so well seasoned and flavoured, which is a big thing for me, as you know.
Yeah, it's really important to you. Not just salt.
I think that's probably the swankiest thing place I've ever eaten. I can't specifically think of a thing, but it's one of those places like I'm vegetarian now, but I think when we go back next, I'll eat meat because it's so good. And
yeah. If I go to somewhere that's got a tasting menu, I eat meat. I've just changed that rule recently. Because it's just, not always, actually. If the vegetarian tasting menu looks amazing, bring it. Like, especially if I went to it, like, it's like an Indian restaurant or something, I don't know. But if it was somewhere like this place sounds, where it's like, I don't know. I feel like only in very swanky places would you. Have you ever had a coddled egg?
No, I've never had a coddled egg.
Sounds like a cuddled egg.
Yeah, like a molly coddled egg.
A molly coddled egg. It's an egg that was allowed to sleep in with its parents until it was 12.
So a chicken.
That's a chicken, isn't it? Yeah. Million. And I don't know what you do to an egg to coddle it. I don't know what the verb is to coddle. It often comes like in the eggshell or something shaped like an eggshell, and it's like it's really intense and rich and creamy and and all orangey, and like it's definitely a yolk based thing that's happened. Anyway, I feel like that's the kind of thing. It's often got like a bit of truffle shaved on it, or like in a nest of hay or some shit that's all smoky, and all the theatre of posh food.
There's always a jus, isn't there?
Mmm.
Or a smear of something.
Yeah. I remember a pub opening in Lewisham near where I live years and years ago. I won't say its name in case it's still there, but I remember it, and it was the first pub that it was, I mean, it sort of didn't really realise where it was. And I remember we went in and laughed that the menu was like, it was basically like, bangs and mash, fish and chips, gammon and eggs, like classic Lewisham pub menu. And then it had like, and then it said like meat and jus. And obviously like the chef has just learnt the word. And I was standing there chuckling and the barman was like, do you not know what a jus is? And then just started telling me what it was. I was like, oh, dude, that's not why I'm laughing. I didn't think you'd just written jus and...
meat and jus.
Yeah, just a meat and some juss. Wow. I think that place in Kent sounds really swanky. And it's made me, I would love the idea of parents saving up and taking you somewhere swanky.
It's so nice.
I'd really like to do that. My mum saved up and took us to swanky Legoland very recently for my son's 5th birthday. The food there wasn't swanky. What we had was a knockoff Colin Caterpillar cake that I'd bought from Tesco's, which I think was called something like Curly Caterpillar Kevin. And then we got a hot dog that was like £6 each, and they did like veggie ones. And we were so hungry by the time we ate it. It was fine. Do you like those hot dog sausages?
Yeah, like I think they definitely have a time and a place. This is the thing. Like, I'm not snobby. I'll eat whatever. And if it's a place where you know you're going to get a hot dog like that, I'll be buzzing for it.
Yeah, I was buzzing for it. And I go, I don't know, what do you have on yours? There was no onion option because this was like out of some spinny machine. Onion. You've got to have onion, but there wasn't an option. I went mustard and ketchup just to maximise flavour in zigzags. Both sauces. Let's not mess about. And then I enjoy the saltiness of it. I enjoy the texture of it. But then there's just something suspicious about it. And I don't know why that's there. I don't think that's snobbery. And even though it's a vegetarian one, it was like, And then I don't know what was going on. I think it's just like so processed that you know that your body's going to go like, And then you know your body's going to stop and go like, And sure enough, every single one of us, like not only couldn't stop, none of us could stop doing the most rank hot dog burps all day, but also everywhere we went we could smell it, and I'm pretty sure there wasn't one cooking everywhere. It was like and we might have all been smelling the ghosts, our burps breath, our burp breath. We might have just had a terrible hot dog ghost breath for the rest of the day.
I that's actually brought a really visceral memory back to me. And I think I went to like Thorpe Park or something when I was a teenager with some friends. And I never used to go to places like that. So it was really novel. And I remember there was a long queue. So I bought a hot dog thinking I'll have net that by the time I got to the front of the queue. Well, the queue moved very quickly. And I just remember eating half of it, but no, putting it on, you know, where you can put your coats and bags. I just left it on the shelf there. And then
not
I came
respect for that.
Off, I was like 16 years old. I come off the roller coaster. I'm like, where's my bloody hot dog? Someone's put their coat on top of it and got mustard all over it. But I'm 16 years old. I just pick the hot dog up and carry on eating it like nothing's happened.
This is lovely. I thought you were going to say you yacked it all up on the roller coaster.
No. I'm not a real vomiter. Well, I am a vomiter, but like I know when I need to do it. But I'll never projectile. I'll have sort of coax myself along.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
No!
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'd really like to go from that to talking about romantic eating. Have you ever done any romantic eating?
What? Do you mean like off someone's body?
I suppose you could read it like that if you wanted to.
No, I've never done any of that. I wouldn't be averse to it.
You said that in a way that made me not believe you, actually. You said that. You said that in the voice of someone who worried their parents might be listening to this.
No. Mum and dad can listen away. They've probably heard much worse. I think the reason I didn't sound like I was telling the truth is because I'm not sure if I'm telling the truth. I'm just trying to go back through the memory bank. I don't think I might have, like, lick some cream off someone's nipple or something. Just one.
I think that's the sort of thing you'd remember for sure if you'd done.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
I reckon.
I feel like I've spoken about it in relationships, but I can't. Then you know, sometimes when you create a memory and you can't tell if it's like an actual memory or whether you've created it.
I think that's amazing. And also, I think food's involvement in sex things is exactly the sort of thing that's sexy and fun to talk about, and the reality of it, as a rule, I would say, is pretty disgusting, pretty disappointing.
Have you ever done it?
I have, but I've never enjoyed it.
That's good to know.
I've gone along with it early on in old, you know, in previous relationships in my 20s. I've gone, because I'm up for anything. And then gone like, what the fuck is this? Like, especially passing stuff back between kissing. I went out with someone who was really into that. I was constantly trying to pass me like bits of chocolate that they'd already like sucked a bit. And I was like, I get it. Some people are going to get off on that, and good on them. Good on them. But yeah, I think that's one.
I could see not like fully taking the chocolate into your mouth and passing it, but like a Lady in the Tramp kind of thing, I think is quite hot. But like, it has to be.
Yeah, it's quite hot, isn't it? Feeding people. People like feeding people. I wonder, do you think this is because I'm an only child that I can't see the cuteness in this stuff? This like feeding and sharing food.
Well, then that's you going into the realms of psychological theory of like relationships are just a reenactment of our experiences as children.
This is what podcasts is for.
Do you know what? As you said that in that creepy voice, the light changed and just went dark and you looked possessed. You look demonic, Jess.
I feel a bit demonic today.
Do you know what? You know, you've got the vibe of, you know, when you do the impression of your son on stage?
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got a lot, you're doing a lot of that today.
Am I?
Yeah.
I don't mind telling you, I had like a big scary work thing yesterday that I've been nervous about for weeks and weeks and weeks. And it's fine and it's done and it was good. But I don't know if it's in the context of lockdown, etc., or whatever, but today, just a huge serotonin drop, as if I've had a massive weekend or something. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. I feel very aware of my mood today. Mm. But I mean, it's the sort of perfect day to be. I'm plonking from Zoom to Zoom to Zoom to Zoom. But in terms of the context of eating, actually, I think it's really interesting because historically, on a day like today, I would hear a call to eat to numb my emotions. And I'm not really hearing that today, or to drink, or to do anything like that. I just, I don't know. I just know that I'm being a little bit irritable. So I think perhaps this coming over across as my impression of my son is potentially me overcompensating.
Interesting. My theory was going to be that, like, I think when we're at our most vulnerable as people, we're just sort of like, it's the inner child thing, isn't it? It's the like responding to like your deep-seated core beliefs kind of thing, isn't it? That your core, the way that you've been programmed since you were a child. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, totally.
And there's a thing that therapists sometimes do, isn't there, where they make you imagine you're in a little child inside you, your child version of you. Viv Groskop, who's lovely and funny and brilliant writer and comedian, has had a lovely bit of stand-up about it years ago. Where she sort of made a very funny, she painted a very funny visual picture of this fucking kid she had to lug about everywhere with herself. Based really on nice. A very embarrassing picture of her as a kid.
It's quite nice though, isn't it? Like when you do realise that and you can just be like, you can forgive a kid much more easily than you can forgive yourself.
And feel sorry for them and be kind to them. Yeah, yeah. 100%. Like it's a really valid theory. What's that little bring?
Oh, just the WhatsApp is pinging, Jess. You know.
Oh, you got your WhatsApp pinging. There she goes. She's just so popular.
I'm very popular.
Are there any food or drink that you hate or love that most people do the opposite of? Are you a bit of a renegade on any fronts?
No, I'm not a renegade at all. I love most foods. Although yes. This does get me into trouble because when people say, is there anything you don't like? I'll be like, I love everything. I'll eat everything. And then I rock up and they're like, I've made this. And I'm like, oh, apart from that. So there must be some stuff that I don't like celery, but I still would eat it. This is the thing, like, with the stuff I don't like, I don't dislike it enough that I wouldn't eat it.
Also, frankly, where have you rocked up and what they've got for you to eat is celery? Because that's not
just
on.
Just the whole celery. just go to Ottolenghi's restaurant and I just get a baked celery. Although that would probably still taste delicious.
He'd manage to make a raw celery delicious somehow, wouldn't he?
But I never liked tomatoes as a child. I didn't like sweet corn. But now I'm sort of a convert to both of those things. I wish I had a better answer for you.
No, I think that's a lovely answer. And also, I witnessed something like my kid's faddy I think probably really normal, but he hated tomatoes. He would never eat a raw tomato. And something's shifted in his taste buds in the last sort of 6 months, and now he'll wallop a couple of tomatoes. And sweet corn's a funny thing.
Where
he'll neck it. Yeah, he'll down it. I've told a story on this podcast before, actually, but you've just reminded me of it. And I haven't told it for so long, I'm going to say it again. But years ago, I used to read the traffic for various like local radio stations. And it was so boring. I nearly got fired once, only because I tweeted about it. But I had a punnet of cherry tomatoes, and I was so bored that I was seeing how many I could be holding in my mouth while I read out the traffic news without anybody noticing. But I was sort of live tweeting it to my whatever 200 followers that I had then. But the company that owned the studio that I was working for saw it, and I got like a proper last, like, straight to final warning bollocking for that. You absolutely are not allowed to do the traffic for Surrey and for Solent, for BBC Solent or LBC with 8 plum cherry tomatoes in your mouth.
It's a good record, and you know what, it's good to know for future reference, actually.
Yeah, talk to me about sweet corn a bit more, because that's what I was originally, you steered me onto, because I don't mind a sweet corn's anything. The idea now, I feel like poor children are often given just a little pile of tinned sweet corn.
Yeah.
I don't think that in itself is a very joyful thing. Maybe it's snobby, but like, I love corn on the cob and I love it if sweet corn's whizzed up and a flavour and other things, but I don't just want a little pile of kernels.
This is the thing. I think you've hit the nail on the head absolutely there, because I think I've started to like it in adulthood because you'll have it on or in something. Like those fucking sweet corn fritters, banging.
Yeah,
lovely, lush. Delicious. But it actually makes me recall that I think often, I probably only did this, no, I did this with 3 foods that I can remember, where I would see them as quite binary things, as my brother liked one and I liked the other. And I saw them as quite like defining characteristics. So I liked cucumber, he liked tomato. I liked peas, he liked sweet corn. I like cheese and onion crisps. He likes really salted crisps. And I don't know why I made that distinction, but yeah, I remember it being like quite an identity as a child. Yeah. Maybe I was just a boring child.
No, not boring child. I think that's it. But also children, you watch kids striving for identifiers and to working out who they are. That's part of what childhood is, isn't it? It's you going, and well, they like that, and I like that, and that is that. And you watch a 5-year-old have to try and compute it when you go, oh, well, that might change, you know, or that has changed, that situation. I did that day, but the reason I'm doing it differently this day is because I've got this opinion now, and then it'll wig them out because it's a there's comfort in the predictability of knowing who likes what and when. And also, I think you get it confirmed, don't you, a lot. Like, you'll have overheard adults going, well, she likes this and he likes that, and he likes this and she likes that. And the more people tell you that's what you like, then the more you're going to continue doubling down on those opinions. Yeah, I watched my kid eat a... it was my dinner. He'd had his dinner. I feel bad saying this at the moment in the current climate where the government have just refused to give kids free school lunches over the holidays. Jesus Christ. But my kid will have, he's of an age where he gets lunch at school, a hot lunch, and for free, because he's just turned five. And then he is so hungry when he gets in that he'll smash snacks through to dinner, and then he'll eat all his dinner, sometimes seconds. And then if I don't have dinner with him then, if I have mine later on his watch, I just have to accept that I'm going to have to give at least a third of it away. I've never known... I have. He's 100% takes after me. But anyway, the other day I had two corn on the cobs, and I cooked them both because I knew that it was the last day they'd be any good. And I... obviously, anyway, I watched him eat a whole one, but even when he'd finished it, he just stayed, like, making sure every little morsel had gone off the middle bit. What an absolute Viking.
But that's the thing we were saying about, like, compulsivity and impulsivity. Like, it's sometimes just the act of, like, filling your mouth. An interesting turn of events has happened in... Well, it's not that interesting. But over lockdown, I've really got into watching competitive eater YouTubes.
Oh, right. Well, this is very interesting. I've never watched this. I'm not sure it would sit right with me. Talk me through it.
It's difficult because I've subsequently, like, showed friends and everyone's been like, it's fucking bizarre. And I think I've forgotten how bizarre I found it when I first started watching it. Like, I would just sort of be like laughing in disbelief. And it's basically just like predominantly guys, but there are some girls who are amazing at it, who they'll eat competitively. So they will enter competitions, but as a sort of like a side thing, they'll YouTube them eating just like large quantities of food, or going to restaurants and doing food challenges there, trying to beat records, stuff like that. So they'll just have piles and piles and piles of this like amazing looking food that they'll just be able to eat pounds and pounds of. So one of my favorites, Joel Hanson, he can eat like, I think his record is like 14 pounds of food. And then there's a guy called Adam Moran who can...
That's a stone.
Like, yes. So it doesn't even touch the side. Like, and what's interesting is...
But it does though, doesn't it? Like, you can get to see what they're like afterwards.
They will do like videos where they show their bellies and you can just see them just full, and like they'll weigh them before and after. And it's... But to me, it's just mad because what they'll do is they're really ripped guys. So Joel Hanson and Adam Moran are absolutely like ripped.
Muscular.
So they'll go to the gym, and then they'll eat, like, say they eat 10,000 calories in one sitting, they'll probably eat 200 to 500 calories the next 4 days to, like, try and level
out. 200 to 500?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is, like...
So they'll fast, and then...
I'm not into it.
And then the way that they'll train is they'll drink gallons of water to expand their stomach. So they're not always having to do the calories to train.
I'm worried about their bodies.
I'm really worried about their bodies too, but also I can't stop watching it. I don't know what it is.
Do you also like watching, like...
Are you going to ask me ASMR?
No. I was going to ask you about other really extreme sports, actually.
No,
really?
It's about food. It's all about the food. So I love watching, like...
Because there's huge YouTube stars, aren't there? And they're often tiny women who've got enormous followings because pervs like watching them have massive amounts of food.
Yeah, like mukbangs, that's what it's called.
What's it called?
Mukbang.
Mukbang. Fucking hell.
So I don't think it's a sex thing. I don't think that word is a sex thing, even though it sounds like it.
Right, yeah, it does actually, doesn't it? Yeah.
So, but basically what they're doing, what those girls are doing is eating large quantities of food and like chatting in between it about their lives. Whereas what the competitive eaters are doing is trying to
They cut that small talk out, haven't they? None of that chit chat. Who gives a? They're like, excuse me, not gonna. I'm humble enough to know no one gives a fuck about my life.
I just want to fucking eat this sausage.
Yeah. What do they do to stop themselves being sick? Because that is what happens up to a certain point. I remember as a kid, it's a weird memory, but I remember we had loads of oranges, and I've been really wary of oranges ever since then. But just sat on my own once of an evening, and for fun, was like, well. You know, it's not the sugary thing. It's not something that's going to make you feel gross. This is like a clean, crispy tasting, you know, fresh thing. See how many you can eat. Just see how many oranges you can eat. And I just ate orange after orange after orange after orange after. I can't remember how many I did, but I remember sitting there being like, well, I've eaten all the oranges. Well done, me. And then be like, oh, and the most horrific sick.
Yeah, because it's citrus and acid, isn't it?
It's, yeah. But I mean, whatever. I mean, I'm not a puker. Like, there have been drunk times where I wished I'm someone who was sick because of how much better you'd feel the next day. But I think your body past a certain point, wouldn't it instinctively normally go, have that back? Whereas these guys must have done some kind of anti-sickness training. I feel like it feels self-harming. It feels like the equivalent of watching, like, don't those people that swallow swords actually, like, they've done some training so that they can do it, but it does eventually cause tons of internal damage.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where there's a shelf life to how long they can do it, because after that it becomes, like, harmful. But they do look after their bodies, and I think they have, like, nutritional advisors and people that support them and stuff. But
I don't think any nutritional advisor is going to say it's fine to have 10,000 calories in one sitting and then go down to 200 calories over the next few days. Like, that's
If you employed someone privately and said, this is my lifestyle choice, I'm going to do this, you can either advise me.
Well, they'll take your money, but they're not going to fucking help you. That feels like the equivalent of someone going, right, I have decided that every single day I'm going to cut myself till I bleed. And that's fine, because then I'll go 2 or 3 days where not only do I not do it, I will put moisturiser on. It feels like that.
Do you think it's ethically wrong for me to watch these videos then?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's perverse and that those people are hurting themselves. But it's not. But I can also understand why it's fascinating. I think it's a personal thing, isn't it? Even stills I've seen, even just photographs. There was one in, I read The Week, and there was a picture of a guy, and he was sort of resting on it. He was bent over a table and resting on his side, I think for speed.
Because
he'd won a hot dog eating competition or something. Skinny, like, spin, scroll, whatever.
That's probably...
wiry little guy.
That's probably what's Matt his name? Stoney. Probably
sounds Matt, like Matt Stoney. Chloe knows. Fuck me. And then he's sort of hunched over, getting a hot dog, and like even in a still photograph of it, I was like, "Whoa, I hope he's all right." But then we do things all the time. I'm not judging. We do things all the fucking time that push our bodies to the extremes of what they can or can't do. And actually, if somebody was going, I'm going to restrict for days and days and days and days and days, we'd all be worried about it. Like, it's a weird thing, isn't it? I wonder what endorphin kick they get. I'd love to be inside the head of somebody who was doing that. I'd love, but I feel sort of slightly stressed when I think about what they're going to feel like afterwards. But then actually, I weightlift, and I'm in awe of people that do strongman competitions and weightlifting and Olympic weightlifting and stuff like that. But after that, your muscles are fucked to shit. Like, you're doing, that is... potentially it's a similar thing, like you're just doing it internally in a way that no one can see. It's funny, isn't it? I'm not saying no one should watch anyone self-harm, because I think I mean self-harm, and I should be very careful here, in the broadest sense of that spectrum, because there's an extent to which all sorts of sports count as that, because you're smashing things up to rebuild them stronger, potentially. I don't fucking know. I don't know what I'm saying.
Let me two reflections. the first one on something that you've said, and the second one, I guess, sort of clarifying what it is that I've never really thought about what it is that I get out of it. And I think the thing that they always say, and I don't know whether it's like a sort of specious justification, and what you're saying is the truth, that it's self-harm, but they say it's like a feat of human athleticism, essentially.
Yeah, and it's a sport.
They talk about how they have to be ripped and they have to have really good cardio, because when you've like eaten 12 hot dogs in 60 seconds, you get out of breath and you need to have like really good cardio to be able to maintain that, and you know, a strong heart, etc. Yeah. etc. I really haven't considered what it is I like about it, but I guess my gateway into it was those like things that would come up on, I don't know if they'll have come up for you, because it was obviously like suggested for me because I'd have clicked on it, but those like proper tasty, and you know, those that channel which is called Proper Tasty and Tasty, and it's like the hands, like, you know, quite pleasant music and then hands chopping and making something, and I would watch those just endlessly just before bed and found them really soothing.
Oh, nice.
And then I think this competitive eating, like, I stumbled across it and I almost feel quite desensitized to it, and I now see them like I've probably dehumanized them, actually, and it's just the act of like seeing all of this delicious food that I would love to be eating being consumed is just really relaxing and soothing in some way.
Do you think as well, though, that there's maybe an element of like, I think as well, especially if you can say to yourself, oh, no sport can be unhealthy, which...
No, I don't think I've ever said that to myself. I've just never thought of it.
But you know what I mean, though? Like, that's a general thought, though, isn't it? I would have said that until... And then you stop and think, oh, maybe it can. It depends how you're doing it and what you're doing. Because I don't know, but I wonder whether there's something about watching people not just eat whatever they fucking want, but to be the shamelessness of it, like the sheer abandon, like the complete lack of inhibition, like, because it is like. We have such a fear, I think, especially as women, of being perceived as gluttonous or greedy, that actually there's surely actually some inevitable catharsis in watching people just fucking smash it in. I wonder whether my opinions on this are so tainted from having a history of binge eating disorder where... somebody smashing food in is not a happy thing. It's to hide from emotions.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I wonder whether it's absolutely ruined me ever being able to appreciate that. And also, I think I've talked so much about disordered eating and happiness and whatever, that the idea of any eating that extreme, any restricting or any, it's the idea of eating that much, and then it's the restricting that stresses me out as much as the thing itself, is like, I just can't fathom it. But then I think probably loads of sports people have to eat in a way that to me feels like terrifyingly unhappy. And it's just a kind of totally skewed personal response to something, that there's a million reasons why it might be fun to watch.
Yeah. And the thing is, again, like, you're bringing something to it that I've never even considered. It never even crossed my mind. And I think that we have a really different background in eating, in that, like, I think that my masculinity was something, and I've only been able to apply this language to it now, but I think my masculinity in a feminized way at an all-girls school was something that was really celebrated through my teenage years. So because I was sort of functioning in the girls' school in that sort of boy role, I think that I got to be boisterous, and it was celebrated when I was the one that ate everyone's leftovers. And I was the one that, and I loved this because I wasn't doing it for show. I loved to eat. It would always be, if I could have more, I would have more and I would love it. And it would never be a problem for me.
Right. Great.
And I, yeah, so I think it was something that was celebrated for me rather than something that I would punish myself for.
And right. I feel really that's that's so fascinating and amazing. I love it. Four hyenas get given the power to brainwash politicians. And at first, it's really funny because it becomes law for everyone to leave loads of dead zebras everywhere. But actually, people stop and think about it and it's awful. Really dog shit. Really traumatising and tiring and heartbreaking. Killing zebras and leaving them everywhere. Fucking hyenas. Anyway, they've agreed to stop, but only a few. And weirdly, it does have to be you, Chloe. Push a broken down penny farthing for 39 miles. It sounds impossible, but you do it! You're a hero! Your award is the adulation of all people for all time, forever and ever and ever. You are happy as an absolute clam. Your award in the moment, though, is the feast of your dreams. Bearing in mind you're pretty knackered out from that 39-mile bike push. Big bike as well. So you are hungry and you are happy. What would be the fantastical, nothing has to be possible, ethical, any of that shit, what would be the feast of your dreams? And I want to know what you'd drink as well, and if there's a who, with, and where, who, with, and where, if anything.
This is such a flex because you're basically just doing off-menu podcast in the last 2 minutes of your own.
This podcast is a year and a half older than off-menu podcast.
Oh no,
so
there was no
swivel.
No implications there was theft there at all. I just think that you're doing it much more economically and efficiently. It's such a good question. I've really been buzzing off croissants recently. I love them so much. Mm. I think they're so delicious. So I think I'd have them somewhere, but probably just one so that I've got room for lots of other stuff. And breakfast, I'd have a fry up, and my dream fry up contains sausages, no bacon, don't like bacon, scrambled egg, some kind of potato element. For me, preferably it's a hash brown.
Very nice. Do you want onion in there?
No.
You know when you get hash browns that taste like there's been tiny bits of onion inside? How do you feel about that?
Thank you for asking the big questions. I think not heavy on the onion flavour, actually, for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't want to lead.
No, I agree. I just wanted to clarify that, really. Okay. I've never asked anyone before.
Sounded quite loaded.
Because hash browns... No, hash browns are really, really great. It's been a long time since anyone's mentioned a hash brown in this part of the podcast, and it's brought me relief, joy, empowerment.
I just fucking love a hash brown.
I fucking imagine not loving a hash brown. Talk me through how. Do you want one that's been deep fried, like in a greasy spoon?
Obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you sort of need that crunchy outside, don't you? And then you need the hot oil to burst in.
Yeah. Anything deep
God,
fried,
I'm about to have
man.
One soon.
I just love deep fried food.
I have to be in the mood, and I think I'm in the mood right now because that's made my mouth water the thought of a hash brown out of a deep fat fryer. No. Oh. I've got waffles.
Yeah, just whack them in a pan of shallow oil.
Maybe. Yeah. I've got obsessed with toasting them at the moment because I'm a lazy prick.
Can I finish? Let me finish my fry up.
Yes, please.
Mushrooms, baked beans.
Yeah.
And the thing with the baked beans is I want a bowl of them so that I can add as many as I need.
Very nice. Yeah, spoon them in at will.
Yeah, spoon them in at will. And I probably want more than I'm actually going to need just so I feel comfortable.
I'm fine with that.
Have I missed any elements of a fry-up?
Have you gone meat-free because you're currently being veggie or no? Because, yeah.
If it's my big meal because I've pushed a penny farthing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then I want my black pudding.
Yeah.
And then I probably have that as sort of like an entree. And then I think I'll probably just have fish and chips. Do you know what? Over lockdown, one of my greatest pleasures is on three occasions I broke my vegetarianism for fish and chips. And what I do is, you know, when over lockdown, you started drinking at like 5 p.m.
Yeah.
So I'd have a couple of beers just in time for the fish and chips to arrive. And then I'd be a bit drunk. So it was like I was having drunk food.
Yes.
And a bit of fish. I put a bit of ketchup on. Oh, my God. It was so good. So I'd probably have that. I'd have beer and I'd have it with my current friendship bubble. Not that that counts anymore. But yeah, my five best friends, I think I'd have it with.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Have you got a favourite beer? What beer would it be?
I really like Neck Oil at the moment, the pale ale.
Oh, Yeah.
Yeah.
Beaver Town.
Beaver Town, yeah.
Got two of them in the fridge, mate. You can have them.
Oh, mate, I'll see you in a bit. I'll be over.
Come on, then.
Throw them into your front garden and I'll pick them up.
I'm in my tum. Thanks so much to Chloe. What an amazing, enlightening, funny, smash guest. Follow her, please. She's on the social medias at Chloe Petts, P-E-T-T-S. Chloe spelt the only way I've ever seen it spelt. She also contributed to Penguin, did an amazing audio thing called Edinburgh Unlocked, like a series along with loads of other really outstanding comedians. And what she contributed is really amazing. You can find it to download from the Penguin website. Obviously, as ever, links are in the podcast notes. Not just to that, but to everything I'm about to mention and to everything we mentioned of note in the podcast. Do you want to try Oddbox, my wonky fruit and veg box that I get if you're in London or near London? You can have a tenner off your first box if you use a link that's in my podcast notes, or indeed go to the Hoovering at the Hoovering Pod Twitter profile, and it's in the biog there. It makes it only a few quid for the first box, and they're so amazing. They're salvaging food that either is surplus or rejected by the supermarkets and other food shops. Feel free to support this podcast of lovely reviews and recommendations in life or online, or with cold hard money, actually, at Acast Supporter or Patreon. Links as ever in the podcast notes to that too. Follow me on social media if you like, at Jessica Foster Q. I've got rescheduled tour dates pushed into the new year, all on my website, jessicafosterq.com. That's also where you'll find how to email me if you want to send me something longer than a tweet. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Happy hoovering.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.